You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 23rd of December, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I promise it will be the last day that I am discussing the Law Commission's hate crime consultation review. But I really cannot stress how important this is, what they're basically trying to do here by removing the need to prove that there is some kind of intent to incite racial hatred. I mean, it really should be intent to incite violence, and that should apply to everybody in society. It shouldn't matter what group you are from. If somebody is trying to incite violence against you, that should be a crime. That is the way that the law is in America. Slightly different over here in Britain, it's intent to incite hate. And when that was brought in, what it meant was hate to the extent where you might try and kill somebody. Literally, murderous hate and inciting murderous hate. And it's been expanded from there to meaning criticism, words that minorities might find offensive, words that they might not like, negative things about them. They've tried to push this that just, for instance, the Jews will try and say that investigating World War II and pointing out facts that contradict the mainstream narrative is inciting hate against them. Of course, we would argue that that is not inciting hate against them. That is just legitimate historical inquiry, and there is no malice intended in that. But they will try to argue that it is people trying to incite hate against them, and they will try to get revisionist historians locked up for investigating World War II. I don't think that they would succeed with that, and in fact, they haven't managed to succeed with that, because the law states that you have to show that there is an intent. What they're trying to do with this law consultation review is remove that need to show that there is intent, which would result in any criticism of anybody from these groups being banned. And it also means that if any crimes are carried out against these groups, the person that carries out the crime will get a much weightier sentence, and it will be treated as being far more serious in law than if the crime had been carried out against anybody else. So there are two really serious issues there. Number one, it means that we are no longer equal under the law, because we don't all get crimes against us carried out to the same degree in the investigation, and the punishments would differ for the people that carried out the crime. And secondly, it means that we would then have groups in society that it was effectively illegal to criticise. We could only speak in flattering terms about them. We see the effects of this today when we see Philip Schofield, when he announced that he was homosexual, and he's been married for 30 years or whatever. So his announcement is effectively saying, I've been cheating on my wife. Yet you did not hear anybody saying he's been cheating on his wife in the mainstream media. All you heard was flattery, people flattering him because he had said that he's a homosexual. So the effects of this are already being felt, that these groups in society cannot be criticised. And this is what this consultation review is seeking to do. Now, they're probably doing it because they've had advocacy groups representing these groups, talking to them and trying to encourage them to do this. And they would have told them that the effects of hearing this negative criticism, it winds people up. It causes them to feel terrible about what they've heard, and then they don't have any more ambition. It means that they don't think that they could ever be better than what they've heard. And this is the same for everybody, though. This is exactly the same for everybody. And if you hear somebody say, oh, you're never going to be able to do that, it makes you think, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. It doesn't make you think, oh, well, I'm not even going to bother to try then. That is not the way we should be encouraged to be. So these advocacy groups that get funding from the government, funding from charities, they've all been pushing for this expansion of the law. It would also mean that we wouldn't be able to protest against certain government policies that concern these groups. For instance, we wouldn't be able to protest against the teaching of homosexuality and transgenderism to children, because they are these protected groups, and they could then say that this was likely to stir up hate against them. We wouldn't be able to protest against immigration, because they want to make immigration and asylum status part of these protected groups, even though they are government policies rather than innate characteristics. There are so many ways that this infringes on people's rights, and I fear that the only people that will be speaking up for us is Civitas. We don't have advocacy groups for white heterosexual males in the same way that Jews have advocacy groups, blacks have advocacy groups, Muslims have advocacy groups. They have so many of them that it's impossible to list. We don't really have any. We have Civitas that are trying to stand up for free speech. So it also is much easier to ensure that they put some clauses into this law that still allow free speech than it is to protest against the law once it actually comes into being. I mean, nobody's been able to change the Public Order Act. And as it is today, there is a small gap within which free speech still exists. And that is if you can show that you are not intending to incite hatred, you're not intending to be hostile to these groups in any way, then you can still talk critically about them. And of course, nobody is hostile to these groups. What we want changing is government policy regarding these groups. And we outline the reasons why we want government policies changing. And when we outline the reasons why we want government policies changing, we end up having to point to statistics, particular instances that are in the news that back up our case against the government. But of course, when we do that, a lot of the time, they are statistics that don't paint these minority groups in a flattering light. And of course, that's why we want these policy changing. If the statistics showed something completely different, then we wouldn't be advocating for the government to change these policies, would we? The government doesn't want to change their policies. So what they want to do is to silence us and prevent us from discussing these things. So we're not only having to take on the government in this, we're also having to take on these advocacy groups for these minority groups. And we don't really have an organized resistance against this, especially with this consultation. So what I'll do today, I'll just have a look at some of these questions that they've got in there and what my answers to their questions are. So we have a question here. We provisionally propose to replace sections 19 to 22 and 29C to 29F of the Public Order Act 1986 with a single offence of disseminating inflammatory material. Do consultees agree? And of course I put no. They then ask you to expand on your answer. And I put inflammatory material is a very nebulous term and could depend entirely on the disposition of the person receiving the material. Rather than trying to criminalise material that offers a different opinion, would it not be better to teach people to have self-control and to accept that other people may have different opinions on minorities to the state-approved ones? What exactly is meant by inflammatory? The dictionary says it could mean to excite anger. Yet anger is what people naturally feel when finding out about heinous crimes. It does not automatically follow that if someone gets angry, they go on to commit violence. And if they do, that violence is entirely their fault and nobody else's. When I was a child, I was taught that claiming somebody else told me to do it was not a defence, as I was responsible for my own actions. Are we to absolve people of guilt for their own actions now and blame the material they read or saw instead? If a heinous crime has been carried out by a member of one of these protected groups, would that mean publicising that crime with a view to changing the law to prevent it happening again? Would that be a hate crime because people would be angry upon hearing it? For example, many people get accused of hate speech for highlighting crime statistics in relation to certain minorities, with the motive of trying to change government policy to limit the number of those minorities and thus limit the number of violent crime. The whole idea is to get people angry about the injustice and get them to channel that anger into lobbying their MP, signing a petition, joining a demonstration, etc. This would prevent the formation of legitimate political movements and prevent people from even being able to highlight an injustice when it involves a minority. It also infantilizes the public and assumes nobody has any self-control if they read something inflammatory. The phrase "don't shoot the messenger" comes to mind. Another side of this is that the whole point of these laws is apparently to protect these minority groups from violence. That was why the Public Order Act was brought in the first place. And yet if we actually look at violence that has been carried out with a motive of going after one of these groups with protected characteristics, such as a crime that was carried out just because the guy was racist and wanted to attack non-whites, or if the guy was a homophobe and wanted to attack homosexuals, those instances of violent crimes have come right down. There's hardly any of them. So the law that we have has worked, and that should be the measure of whether it needs changing. Should be, has the law worked? Has it been successful? Yes, it has been successful at preventing violent attacks against minorities. But now they've expanded it and they're trying to say, well, it needs to not, people need to not be able to criticize these minorities. So they've expanded the meaning of it. And now they're saying, well, the law hasn't worked because we still have people that are critical of minorities. Well, it's our right to speak and explain to people how we see the world. It's our right to do that. If we see an injustice, our conscience tells us that we need to speak up about that injustice and we need to warn people about that hazard. And what these new proposed changes to the laws do, that they will prevent people from being able to speak according to their conscience. So this lumping everything in under inflammatory material, because what one person may think is inflammatory, another person may think isn't inflammatory. And I bet they say, well, if one person might think it's inflammatory, then that should be classed as inflammatory, because there will be at least one person that might go over the edge. But we should be teaching people to have self-control, not teaching people that they can absolve themselves of guilt for a crime because somebody else told them to do it. I mean, as I pointed out there, when I was taught at school, I was taught that is not an excuse. You cannot say so-and-so told me to do it. And yet the whole point of this law seems to be saying that that is an excuse. So you can blame the person that told you to do it. We need to be teaching people to have self-control, not bringing in these laws that trample over your right to free expression of your conscience. Another question here, we invite consultees' views on whether the meaning of likely to in the racial hatred offence should be defined in statute or for any other characteristics to which it would apply in future. We further invite views on how this might be defined. I mean, look at that, likely to. Either something is or it isn't. But they want to actually put the phrase likely to into law. So I've put, yes, all terms in the statute should be as specific as possible. Unfortunately, much of the wording is subjective rather than objective. Even the word offensive is being misused, as a person takes offence. They don't give offence. A person could take offence at anything and everything, regardless of if any offence was intended, or even if anyone else might find it offensive. If the person who took that offence was a minority, then their target is automatically accused of a hate crime. And this is the guidance that they have. If a minority says they were offended, it's automatically assumed that a crime has taken place. So the person who claims to be the victim is then also the judge, which again breaks another maxim of law, which I've gone into over the last couple of days. I say this is obviously wide open to abuse, and specific definitions for terms would help people who have no intention of stirring up hatred to avoid being accused of it. Either something is intended to stir up hatred, or it isn't. Using the phrase likely to introduces deliberate ambiguity and subjectivity into the statute, and it means that people who had no wish to stir up racial hatred at all could still be found guilty. This would have a massive chilling effect on free speech and freedom of conscience. It's like if you're in a football game and you're taking a shot at the goal and it doesn't go in, it hasn't gone in. It doesn't matter how likely to go in the goal it was. It didn't go in the goal and you didn't win the football game. So either something is or it isn't. And the law is supposed to be about getting to the facts of matters, getting to the truth of a matter. So to have this phrase likely to in there just means that innocent people will be found guilty of this. People that have no intention of inciting racial hatred will be found guilty of doing so, regardless of whether they have or whether any racial hatred has actually been given any expression at all. Of course, these laws are about trying to prevent that from happening, but of course they have to be weighed up against freedom of speech and freedom of conscience. I mean, it's essential to being a human to be able to express your opinion on things and how you see the world and how you interpret what is going on. Next consultation question. We provisionally propose that intentionally stirring up hatred be treated differently from the use of words or behaviour likely to stir up hatred. Specifically, where it can be shown that the speaker intended to stir up hatred, it should not be necessary to demonstrate that the words used were threatening, abusive, or insulting. Do consultees agree? I just find that absolutely incredible. What they are saying there is, somebody that is not using words that are threatening in any way, or abusive in any way, or insulting in any way, can still be accused of intentionally stirring up hatred. And this is the sort of thing that would get people that were investigating World War II into trouble, because obviously they're not using threatening, abusive, or insulting language. But they would be accused by Jewish advocacy groups of intentionally stirring up hatred by investigating World War II. So that's what is going on here. So even if you're not being threatening, abusive, or insulting, you could still be accused of stirring up hatred. I put, there should be no offence of likely to anywhere in law. Either something was intended to stir up hatred or it wasn't. If there is no evidence of threatening words, then there is no evidence of stirring up hatred. Abusive or insulting words are often the result of heated argument. It is unfair that one group of people can be prosecuted for that, but not the other. If no intent to stir up hatred can be demonstrated, then there should be no charges because there was no intent to break the law. And when you think about this, abusive or insulting words, they're also used all the time in comedy, they're also used all the time in humour. Yet if you were to use abusive or insulting words concerning any of these groups, then you would be accused of being likely to stir up hatred. So you wouldn't be able to have any comedy that made any jokes about homosexuals, transgenders, women, other minorities. You would not be able to have jokes. You would not be able to have an argument with any of these groups where you insulted one of them or a member of these groups. If you insulted them or you said something abusive to them, you would be accused of being likely to stir up hatred. I've put words themselves never hurt anyone. And we used to be taught in school that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It is necessary to internalize this principle in order for people to develop self-discipline and to not lash out violently at people who disagree with them. This novelty in law appears designed to police people's speech and prevent them from sharing their opinions with others. Something that goes right against what we understand by the words a free society. It will also give minority groups an excuse to violently attack anyone they are disputing with, as it could legally then be seen as trying to prevent a crime from happening. There should be no likely to anywhere in law, as it means that innocent people will lawfully be found guilty. Direct physical threats are the only threshold that should be used, and it should apply to everybody equally under the law, not be handed out to select groups in society, creating a new elite class of people with extra protections to the rest. And an important part of this, I think, is this excuse that it gives minority groups to physically attack someone that they are disputing with. And again, this is something that we are already starting to see. We are seeing things like such as Black Lives Matter attacking Trump supporters and it being reported in the press that they were defending themselves. It was seen as self-defense because the Trump supporters were supposedly using hate speech, and hate speech they try to pretend is already a crime. It's not a crime, but they try to pretend that it is a crime. And if somebody's committing a crime, you're supposed to try and prevent them from doing so. So these minorities attack the Trump supporter, and it gets reported in the mainstream media as Black Lives Matter defended themselves from the Trump supporters. And in actual fact, the Black Lives Matter violently attacked the Trump supporters, who then tried to defend themselves. So this would actually put that into law, that it was okay for these minority groups to physically attack the people they disagreed with. They would actually have a legal defense for doing so. They could say, I was trying to prevent a crime from happening. Next question. We provisionally propose that the offenses of stirring up hatred be extended to cover hatred on the grounds of transgender identity, sex, gender, and disability. Do consultees agree? So this is where they're trying to put all these minority groups all in together. One of these minority groups is sex or gender, which basically means women. So it's all women, all different races, all different religions, all different sexualities. And the only people that are excluded from this, of course, are white heterosexual males. I've answered, stirring up is a really nebulous term. It should be intent to incite violence, and it should apply to everyone in society equally and give everyone in society equal protections from violence, not just people of one sex or one gender. Stirring up implies mixing previously known information with new information, which is how we progress in knowledge. One man's stirring up hatred could well be another man's quest for knowledge, whereas intent to incite violence is objective and not subjective. It would also prevent people from protesting against all government policies concerning those groups that have been awarded special protections that the rest of society does not have. This implies that the government realizes it does not have consent to its policies in those areas and is seeking to silence dissent instead of acting in accordance with the majority's wishes. If this becomes law, it means the government no longer thinks it requires the people's consent to govern. Because, of course, they would effectively be banning protests and dissent about policies concerning women, gender, immigration, diversity, all protests against those sort of government policies would be banned because the people protesting could be accused of stirring up hatred. And this idea of stirring up, it's such a dreadful term for them to use. I mean, where I put here, it could well be one man's quest for knowledge. Again, I mean, it could just be somebody's historical investigation, investigating World War II, or it could be somebody collating statistics on race. I mean, Dr. Edward Dutton, he's doing loads of work collecting statistics together on race. And of course, that shows there are differences between the races. And subjectively, some of the races are better than others in certain subjects. That could then be accused of stirring up hatred because it implies that there are a difference between the races. So therefore, legitimate scientific inquiry could then be made illegal. Final question I have here. We invite consultees' views on whether the definition of hatred for the purposes of the stirring up offences should include hatred on grounds of one or more protected characteristics. And I put, hatred should not be criminalised. Hate is not the opposite of love. Hate is a part of love. We hate anything which harms the object of our love. If hate is going to be used in law, then it should be specifically defined and exactly what actions constitute it. And this needs to be the exact same criteria for everyone, so that we don't give one group extra protections that the rest do not have. And of course, they can't do that, because if they were to define it and apply the law equally, then we wouldn't be able to do anything at all, pretty much. You wouldn't be able to protest against anything. And they appear to have forgotten that the definition of this originally was a hatred that is to a sufficient extent where people are likely to carry out violence up to and including murder. I mean, this was all brought about through the Stephen Lawrence murder, where apparently there were people that were sitting around at home and talking about how they wanted to go out and kill a black man. And apparently it wasn't illegal to be saying things like this. So that's why this law was brought in, to make it illegal to say things like that, so that people could be arrested for that. And rightly so, but it should be that it's illegal to incite violence against anyone, regardless of what group they are in society. Everybody should be treated equally. And in their rush to appear to be non-discriminatory to these minority groups, they appear to have forgotten that we should all be equal under the law. And what they're doing is overturning that with these hate speech laws. And they're also trying to make them apply within your own home. I mean, an Englishman's home is his castle. He should be able to say and feel exactly, he should be able to say exactly whatever he wants within his own home, and he should be free to say whatever he wants within his home. The only time that he shouldn't be, and it should be against the law, is if he's conspiring to carry out a crime. I mean, we do have laws on the books against conspiracy, and it doesn't matter where you are. If you're carrying out a conspiracy, you're plotting to break the law, then that is a crime. And really, this if you're encouraging others to carry out violence against other members of society, then that could be included in the conspiracy laws, I would have thought. Wouldn't have needed to have a specific law to cover it. But we do have these laws to cover it. We do have these hate speech laws, the Public Order Act, and they are trying to extend it. So basically, make it illegal to dissent against diversity. That's really what it comes down to. And the problem is, the people that are looking into this, they work for the government. Obviously, they will have been on diversity training, critical race training. They will have all been taught about white privilege. And they will, on the other side of that, they will also have been told that the people that they're trying to legislate against just don't like these minorities because they don't like the colour of their skin. So they aren't actually aware of what our arguments are. They have a straw man caricature of the target of who the target that these laws are aimed at. They have a straw man caricature of that. So I would hope that if people do or have written in and answered this consultation, because the last day that it needs to be in by is today, I would hope that they would temper their extension to this law and ensure that there is still space for free speech. I mean, really, they should just leave it how it is, where there is still that area where people can exercise freedom of conscience and freedom of speech. Because if they take away any need to actually have an intent to incite hatred, then it just opens it up for full-on censorship. And it means that we would be living under a dictatorship. It means that the government would no longer have consent to be governed, because it would have made it illegal to dissent against certain government policies. It's incredible when you think about all these really, really foundational tenets of democracy that will be overturned by this if they manage to make it into law. As I say, that's why it's still a consultation at the moment, and then they're going to be forming their policy over the next few months. Well, I'm sorry to talk about such a negative thing just before Christmas here. Some good news that I can bring you is that we have some excellent Greatest Britons episodes that are coming up over the next couple of days, and the Daily Nationalist will be back next week after Christmas. Thank you very much for listening. Do have a wonderful Christmas. God bless. And hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.